Ash doesn't just get friends, he makes them partners. Ash is the founder of Brown Flag Group, an organization that helps businesses grow through both marketing and sales. Ash takes the whole buying process into consideration in order to set the right expectation for leads way before the sale occurs. Ash will be talking to us in this podcast through his process to connect the funnel and properly motivate prospects. You can also find him at his personal site, which I will add to the show notes, and even more insights on his sales knowledge. He's very active on social media, so you may want to look on Twitter and follow him there as well. In this podcast, Ash reveals how to set the expectation for the buyer cycle, tips to recognize when a prospect is done being nurtured, and the importance of respecting one of my favorite topics, levels of awareness. So in your current deal that's finishing up, you've examined the entire pipeline then. You actually assembled, activated, and optimized from beginning to end, correct?
I would say not so much the assembly part, but the optimization definitely, and to some degree assembly. Right? I mean, they had an existing process in place, even if it wasn't codified or documented. You know, they were closing business without my help or before my help. But my objective over the course of the last 3 months was really to help them document and codify what they were doing, how they were doing it, and then step in on occasion where, you know, there are some obvious improvements that they can make to the way they do things.
Okay. So what was the biggest sort of validation that you saw of what people keep continually struggling with, especially with the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I think the main thing I've realized in the last few years, so before this I was at Optimizely, a company called Optimizely, for about 3 years, and I built out their inside sales organization. So I had a global inside sales org running the inbound and outbound SDRs for a few years. And the biggest thing I've noticed throughout the entirety of the sales cycle is that the work that you do early on the sales cycle really has an order of magnitude effect on what happens on the end outcome. So for positive or for better or worse, what you do in the discovery stage of your sales cycle is going to have really positive impacts or negative impacts downstream. And, you know, Andy Grove talks a lot about this in high output management, the importance of getting things done early on as opposed to trying to fix them later on in the process. So really the main thing I've noticed Spiderbook and a lot of young sales organizations need help with is really setting their sales cycles up in a way where they think of it as a project to manage. Right. And with projects that you're managing, what you want to do is you want to lay out the deliverables early on and make sure that you get buy-in from every stakeholder in the process. So, for example, you're the project manager as the salesperson. You need to get the buy-in of the person on the other end of the line, the champion, that, hey, we're going to need to do X, Y, and Z on dates A, B, and C in order to get you guys live and up and running and reaping the benefits of our solution by the date that you said you need it, by the compelling event date, let's say. And most salespeople just fail to do that. It's this kind of like, let's just work as if my sales project is a black hole, and hopefully this will close, and I'll just start hounding them when I need to hear back from them, and then people go ghost, people go missing, and it really ends up with some very unfortunate circumstances. So the importance of just setting expectations early on in the cycle and getting buy-in from the other parties involved on the customer end primarily are really, really important. And I found that just implementing that alone has had huge, huge improvements on things like win rates, average deal size, and velocity overall.
You know, it's funny you say that, because one of the things that we talk about in my new book is about mapping the buyer journey, what we call it. And it's almost like a gigantic mind map of the steps that buyers typically take in going, since I specialize just at the top of the pipeline from cold contacts through qualified opportunities, we map out the various paths that a particular prospect can take. And we do that for every single potential buyer, because we also have the issue at the top of the pipeline of when are people actually going to enter. You know, since we're starting cold, we may not even get to the decision maker. We may know the name of the decision maker, but we may not even get to that person, but we still need to keep them in the loop. So I like what you're saying. Do you have or have you implemented a mind mapping type of methodology, or how do you get people to actually sit down and talk through, beginning with the end in mind and backing up all the points along the path? How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the main thing that you want to do here when you're creating, and I don't like the idea of mind maps for sales processes, or they make sense. They're actually far more, a mind map is far more accurate depiction of what the customer buying process looks like. But the problem with a mind map that I have and why I don't use it is because they are messy. Inherently, typically a mind map is messy. There are a lot of different end outcomes, a lot of different paths to getting there. Yeah. And in sales, particularly in bottom of the funnel, middle to bottom of the funnel, you really want to make sure that you're in control and that there's a linear path that you always follow. And there may be some steps that aren't necessarily needed to check off in certain sales cycles, meaning, you know, a smaller company, you might not have to go through a lengthy legal or procurement review process, and that's fine. But it should always be linear, because you should always, as the project manager, try to have control of a kind of a linear path and move things along that path. And if you don't have buy-in from your customer that they're okay with this, you don't really have a deal, right? Mm-hmm. You have, I don't know what you have, but you don't really have a deal that you can forecast.
You have a lag. You have a lag in the pipeline is what you have.
that's pretty much. You have a bunch of stuff there that some, you know, it's a probabilities game at that point. And I don't like running deals that way.
Right.
So what I try to do instead of a true mind map is, you know, do some customer research, understand, you know, how, you know, a snapshot of your customers got to you, you know, and what the purchasing and what the buying process looked like from their perspective. And it's important to do this from the buyer's perspective, because a lot of sales organizations actually end up, you know, trying to build out what the journey looks like from the seller's perspective. And then you end up using language that's not very powerful or compelling for the buyer. Like, why does a buyer give a shit if you need this deal closed by April 1st? You know what I mean? Like, they don't care. What they care about is, hey, we have this event that we're launching mid-May, and in order for us to reap the benefits of your analytics tool and understand who we should be kind of selling or to attend that conference, we need to have this up and running by, you know, let's say April 15th, which means we have to have the deal signed by April 1st. So you want to work backwards from that kind of implementation date or date of benefit. But regardless, it's not terribly, you know, sophisticated, the kind of the journey that I would map. It's more of a linear kind of process with steps along the way that each party is responsible for. Usually a spreadsheet is just fine. But the most important thing is less so the map itself, and more so what the map signifies. It signifies that the person on the other end had bought in, that they say, at some point, yes, I agree to do this on April 1st. I agree to do this on March 27th. I agree to do this, and you will do that in parallel. And once you have that buy-in, negotiation down the line becomes very easy.
Yeah, I was just on the phone last week with a gentleman who talked about a book that was written in the 70s called Getting to Closed. And it was all about setting, he focused on dates and activities within dates as mapping from opportunity down to close. And I liked where they were going with it, because that also presented what you say is a linear progression, and it also is time sensitive. And then the nuance to that was trying to, which they didn't really talk about back then, but now with the buyer journey and the fact that buyers are more informed, or seemingly more informed, because they have the ability to search and do other things, the overlay of the journey to a time sensitive type of linear progression seems to be a great combination. in order to reduce the lag in the pipeline.
Absolutely. And I actually just wrote a blog post about this. I'd love for you to check it out. I'd love to check out that book, Getting to Close.
It's called Getting to
there's
Close.
There's a sales hacker post. Yeah, I'm going to check that out. I think it's right up my alley. There's a post I just wrote about this stuff. If you're interested in checking it out, it's called Project Managing Your Way to the Gong. It's on Sales Hacker the last week. So, I really, you know, that's the biggest thing. It's just a good discovery where you set expectations and get alignment. And then from there, kind of managing everything in a time-bound way.
Ash, I just lost you. So if you could restate what you were just saying in the last 30 seconds or so.
Yeah, I was just saying, what did I say? I said, you know, that's mostly what sales is and kind of the way I've learned to sell and train teams to sell is, you know, doing good discovery, understanding what the problems are on your customer's end, then turning that into the need for a solution, educating your buyers about why your solution solves their problems. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it's just really proper discovery or proper expectation setting and saying, hey, you know, in order for you to reap the benefits of this, you know, you and I are teammates. We are working towards a shared goal. And in order for us to achieve that goal by the date that you need to achieve that goal by, you know, we need to do X, Y, and Z together on these dates. Are we on the same page? And if you have agreement, that's fantastic. If you have some objections, then you try to overcome those objections. But if you have someone on the other end of the line who's just not interested or not willing to cooperate, not mm-hmm. willing for you to be the project manager on this path towards purchase, then you don't really have a deal.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. To what level are you feeding back information to, like, say, marketing, or if they do somehow fall out and go into a nurture status, what types of paths do you help people define to get them back out of nurture, back into the working cycle, or at the very least, feeding that conversation back to marketing so that at the top of the pipeline, they are now armed with better conversation topics?
Yeah, that's a great question. With regards to, you know, what pull, I'll kind of split this question into two. The first was, I think, what kind of actions do you look for that imply to the sales team that this person is ready to come out of a drip and back into a sales cycle, correct?
Yeah, that's the first question.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So, I mean, there are some explicit things, right? Like, for example, they reply to an email or they go back to a website and say, I want to talk to sales. Less explicit or less obvious ones. Like, for example, they take... Yeah, so there's the explicit ways for something to come back into nurture or come out of nurture back into the sales cycle, which is they reply to an email saying, I want to talk to someone on sales, or they fill out a contact sales form. Pretty obvious. But then there's the less obvious stuff, like, for example, they're in our product in a free trial, perhaps, and they perform a series of actions that we know from a probability perspective signifies a high likelihood that they turn into a customer soon. So then there should be a trigger in your marketing automation or CRM that automatically pushes that as a behaviorally active lead back to a salesperson.
That's great. And we do a little bit of that at the top of the pipeline too. We call them behavioral indicators. And the reason why, what we do with them is we watch to see if they're ready to be put into our calling queues. So it's a little bit different than you're talking about. But we look at clicks, you know, specific content that they're interested in. We look at, if we can, get the time spent and the depth of interest on the website itself. We also track their path movements, whether they're deep and focused or if they're shallow and erratic. We look at the frequency, as you know, the activity versus inactivity. And then, as you mentioned, the downloading forms, opting in, asking for a rep, attending a webinar. And then, of course, what we hope for is the email replies, the inquiries, the direct, I want to talk to somebody. So we take all those indicators as well. But the call to action or the focus is to get them into our calling queue.
Exactly. Yeah. And in many ways, and it depends on how your sales organization is structured, it's actually can be very similar to what you're describing at the very top of the funnel. Mm-hmm. It's just more a matter of that kind of that actual loop, right? Like the bottom of funnel kind of pushes back to the top, and then an SDR gets the notification. Maybe in some organizations, it's the AE who falls back. It doesn't really matter so long as there's that kind of connectivity loop there.
Perfect. And so that's coming back into the funnel. Now, what happens if they are nurtured? So they're not ready. They're not coming back in. What is the process there that you found that is the most successful?
So you're saying, can you just help clarify all that?
Their behavior isn't giving you a clear map as to whether or not you should engage with them. Mm-hmm. So you need to sort of force the engagement. And at the top of the pipeline, what we do, for example, with those nurture peoples, we recycle them back in as if they're new again. So I was just curious, when they fall out further down into the pipeline from opportunity to close, what processes you've seen that have worked for those people who are just not even budging, but you think are qualified, the accounts, they're in your ideal customer profile, et cetera.
Right. So good demographic fit, just not at all responsive. What do you do there?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a harder question, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I have the perfect or the right answer for this one, but I think, at that stage we're somewhat, there's a reason they're allergic to the idea of reaching out. Maybe it's, and usually what I think it is it's just lack of awareness of what the solution is or what the problem actually is. Because there's this kind of unconscious incompetence level that exists, particularly around risk averse, like market majority, folks in the market majority. Yep. Where they don't necessarily know that the way they're doing things today is a problem. And those are the hardest people to sell to in my experience. Because the people who realize that they have a problem, it's only a matter of time before you convince them, if you're a good salesperson, that your solution can fix that problem.
Right.
But the people who don't even understand that, the Sony Discman that they're carrying around is like this crap and they should upgrade to an iPhone with MP3 capability. Like those people are harder to convince, right? You first have to make them aware of the fact that there is a problem, and then and only then can you really start selling them your product and will it resonate. So I think the reason I'm saying all that is because I think education and agnostic marketing is the most important thing at this stage. The quote I always say here is the Henry Ford thing, where he said, if I asked people what they wanted, they would set a faster horse.
Right.
So it's not about marketing them towards a solution. It's about marketing them in a way that allows them to understand that they have a problem, and then you can send them into the cycle.
Yeah, we're definitely on the same page there. The precursor to all of this was Eugene Schwartz, Breakout Advertising, which I think that book was written on my 1950s, my birthday decade.
Oh, wow.
And it talks about the level of five levels of awareness and being respectful of where the buyer is at in that consciousness. And so what you're describing is what he calls that they are not unaware, or they think they are aware of a problem, but don't know if there's a solution, or don't even know that there's a vendor that can have that solution. So those levels kind of, are best residing in marketing's hands in terms of the long-term nurture. And as soon as someone, lifts a little eyelash, then we take them in at the top of the pipeline and start getting them sort of warmed up and warm up that chill to a point where they want to engage with the sales executive.
Exactly. You got it.
Yeah. So tell us about your new venture when you come back from your travels.
Yeah. So I will be joining Heap Analytics as their VP of sales. They have currently a very high functioning, albeit inexperienced, sales team that's doing very well, but definitely can use a little guidance. I'm going to help them, go from where they are now to the next level, and really excited about that opportunity.
Yeah, that's great. And so if people are listening to this conversation and wanted to get to know you, your work, how to get a hold of you, what is the best way that they can do that?
Let me see here. So I have my website, ashalhashin.com, which is a mouthful. First name, last name, brownflag.com. Okay. I also have my consulting website, brownflag.io,
okay.
Where we post some content over here and there, and we can talk a little bit about our offerings and our background. The Sales Hacker, go to saleshacker.com, check out Ash L. Hashim. I'm on there. I have quite a few posts for you guys to check out. Would love to get thoughts and feedback on them.
Okay.
I'm of course online, all those social media channels on Twitter, LinkedIn, so on. I'm pretty active on all of the above.
Very good. So if we were to, I like to compartmentalize myself, because when I want people to think of Mary Lou, it's sales process, it's top of funnel. When we think of Ash, can we put you in a box a little bit for the sales engine?
Oh,
or are you like all over? You're beginning to end.
I like to think of myself as beginning to end. I do think of myself as a marketing-oriented salesperson.
Okay.
So definitely that API point between marketing and sales, that handoff, which I think is crucial in any organization that is high functioning.
Right.
I take pride in really understanding, demand generation, digital marketing, event marketing, and offline marketing as well as I can. I do have a day job after all, but I take pride in understanding that domain and working collaboratively with marketers to achieve a common goal.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that about the sales and marketing alignment. I'm actually talking with an expert on Saturday that's all he does is he specializes in sales and marketing teams working together, mostly for lead generation. So he's more up at the top of the funnel as well. But that's becoming a really hot topic. And we really depend on marketing, at least the content assets, because at the top of the pipeline, when we're trying to start conversation, we're linking through and clicking through to content to try to understand where they are behaviorally, as we just discussed before. So,
absolutely.
Taking a long piece of content, the longer post, and the way I describe it is we flip it sideways, and then from there we create persuasive content assets that we can link to in our cold emails so that we can see what's of interest to people, what they're clicking on, if they're signposting or breadcrumbs to a lengthier piece of content that helps us gauge where they're at behaviorally. So it's very helpful.
Very neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is super, super helpful. Because the buyer who is not fully engaged and not at a stage where you can get feedback from them explicitly is very difficult at the moment to really understand. So
And then when you get them further in, they're also less committed. So your point about, they've got to be committed to the process and shown how to go from A to B to C to close. So it all starts with, what is this level of engagement that they have? Are they just appeasing us, or are they truly, genuinely committed to, changing their lives and transforming their business?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great way to say it.
Well, thank you so much, Ash, for your time. And I'll put on this, I'll get all of the first, last name and all of that for everybody so that they can follow you and watch your progress at Heath Analytics. That's awesome.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It was really nice meeting you over the phone, and hopefully I'll put a face to the name soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Ash. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mary Lou. Bye-bye.
Bye.